Now, last September, I was presenting, or I was emceeing at a Gift of Life ball, and I encountered my next guest, a beautiful young lady who 12 months before that had received life-saving treatment, a double lung and a heart transplant. That can only mean one person, and that is a lady all the way from Bishopstown in Cork, Isabel Terry, and she joins me on the line. Isabel, good evening.
Good evening, Dara. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And look, just at the outset, before we get into it, I suppose endless possibilities at this time. We think of Sally Nagle, who is back on the transplant list, unfortunately, 11 years on, and our thoughts and prayers are with her, and indeed with everybody who's on the transplant list.
Absolutely. But I can say, knowing Sally, she's a very strong, determined young woman, so I think she's going to be fine. But yeah, I'm thinking of her always, and hopefully her donor will turn up. It'll be great news for her again.
It will indeed. Now, Isabel, I met you for the first time last year, and you were sitting opposite the table, dressed to the nines. You were the belle of the ball. And then I discovered that you had a double lung and a heart transplant. And I'm looking at this lady, I'm saying, never. Isabel, tell us your story. How long were you waiting, actually, for a transplant? And just tell us your story of what led to that amazing day, really.
Well, I was actually born with a heart condition. So I've been sort of sick, really, since birth. I had surgery at about 3 weeks old. And again, at about 12, I had open heart surgery again up in Crumlin. Those surgeries were done. And, you know, I had a very normal childhood. I was one of six, three girls and three boys in Bishopstown, so there was plenty of rough and tumble in our house. And my parents were told, you know, to treat me normally. Obviously, I couldn't do things like the rest of my brothers and sisters or my friends. Like, you know, I couldn't really ride a bike properly or rollerblades. But I never felt different from anyone else because I was given the bike and I was given the rollerblades, even though I didn't use them much. So life was good. But in secondary, I started getting sick again. And unfortunately, I had to leave just after Christmas in sixth year. So I was sick for a few years and sort of got better again. And I was sort of up and down, and I did a little bit of part-time work, but I was never well enough to work full-time or go to college full-time. So in 2001, I was sent over to the UK for more open heart surgery, and it was done by a world famous surgeon called Magdi Yacoub. The listeners might know his name. He was the surgeon that showed let Princess Diana watch open heart surgery all those years ago. So he performed surgery on me, and I was sick for about 3 months, and I was let home. I was fine, and I was told that I would have many, many years. And for a good year and a half, I was so well. I was a different person, and I went off on holidays, and I came back from holidays, and I was very sick. I went into the bonds that night. I thought I was dehydrated from too many cocktails, but it actually turned out to be pneumonia, and eventually then it was heart failure. So in 2003, I actually went on the list. I went up to the monitor and they did all their tests, and they said that I actually needed a heart transplant. So, I mean, surgery was very daunting, but a transplant was another level. I mean, the open heart surgeries I had had before, especially in 2001, were huge. I was so sick, and the thought of being on a transplant list was just mind-blowing. And I told my parents, I said, you know, I think I've had enough, and I've had many years, you know, maybe it's time to sort of not throw in the towel, but go, you know, I have had many years, many good years. I have a very, very happy life, and I've had wonderful family and friends and parents. And I actually left the matter, and I said, I think I have to think about it. And I went home, and I did think about it, and I thought about it, and it was Christmas time, and one day I came downstairs and I said, I'm after going on the list. I just made my mind up that, you know, this was my only chance, and what I had been through before, if I can come through that, I can come through a transplant. And I went on the list thinking I would get called, you know, within a few months or whatever, you know, because I was very sick. But cutting a long story short, I waited about 7 years, and I'd been called about 3 times and they didn't go ahead. I had been prepped for surgery a couple of times, literally gowned, and it's on the night they could have a couple of different people waiting for that particular heart. It might sound cruel, but it literally is down to the last minute to see who the best match is. And I got very sick in 2009 again, and I was in the Mater for a couple of months, and they realised I needed a lung transplant as well. So that's when they decided to send me over to Newcastle, and Newcastle did their own tests, and they said it was actually a heart and double lung. So I got called for the heart and double lung once, which was unsuccessful. And then in 2017, after waiting nearly 15 years, I got the lucky number 7 call, which was for heart and double lung. And myself and my mum and my fiancé, Philip, got on the flight in Cork, and we went over to Newcastle, and I was transplanted. And I haven't looked back since.
Wow, what an absolutely powerful story. Yep. Isabel, if I can just take you back for a moment, you know, when they told you were going to be going on the transplant list and you had these doubts and you weren't going to throw in the towel, but surely your mortality must flash before your eyes and you're thinking, you know, is this the end? But it actually was just the beginning.
It was. You know, because I had been sick before, in my mind I was thinking I had faced death so many times, you know, hardly as well. There's no chance. At the start I was like, there's no chance you're getting another go at this. You know, you've been so lucky. Do I want, in my mindset I was sort of going, oh, I won't go on the list and I'm going to do this, that and the other before I die. But then I was saying to myself, well, you can't do this, that and the other because you're not able to. You're on oxygen. You can't leave your bed. You can't walk down the stairs. You need a stair lift. You know, so all these things that in my head that I'm going to do weren't going to be possible anyway. And I guess I sort of had a little talking to myself and went, do you know what? You can bloody do this. It took me long enough, but I was able to do it. And I was right. I held on for all those years, and I had numerous visits to doctor consultants saying, you know, with my parents going, look, we're saying maybe six to nine months. And that happened a couple of times. And there was the last time I went to a consultant, I was told probably 3 months. And the 3 months came and passed, and I just kept going. I kept fighting.
Well, Isabel, if I can just cut in here. I know the term inspiration is used many, many times, sometimes inappropriately, but I think on this occasion it has to be said, you are living proof that transplantation works. And when I spent time with you and all the other transplantees last year, I mean, I got that real sense that whilst you were really, really delighted and you appreciated the second chance at life, at the same time, you were remembering that, you know, in most cases, it takes someone else to lose their battle with life for you guys to live. And I was very taken by the fact that at all times, you're very, very considerate and you're minded that you're thinking of those other people whose families you'll probably never get to contact. But, you know, you're just conscious that thank you to them for their gift to you.
Absolutely. I mean, thank you to them, but I don't know what to say. There's nothing you can give them. It's just like, Dara, if you had met me 2 years ago, I couldn't get out of my bed. I was on oxygen 24 hours a day. I had to use a stair lift. I couldn't go for a cup of coffee with my friends without having to come home and having a four-hour nap. Literally for half an hour for a cup of coffee down the road. My life has changed completely, and it's because of this selfless act from this person that I don't know. This person has decided, you know, God, if anything happens to me, I would donate my organs. This person had the conversation with their next of kin, and their family decided to donate that person's organs and give me a second chance. You know.
And of course, the amazing thing is, Isabel, that advances in medicine are happening so quickly now that it's not just the regular heart and lungs and kidneys that people transplant anymore. You can get your eyes transplanted. There's just about anything that can be transplanted, that can be harvested. That's the clinical term. But all it takes is for somebody to text organ donor to 50050. Go into your local pharmacy. Have the conversation with family or friends that, God forbid... Pardon?
That is the most important thing, can I just say, because if you have your donor card ticked and you have, or signed, and you've your driver's license ticked and you've a tattooed on your head, it is still the next of kin's decision at the end of the day in this country. And a lot of people don't know that, so that's why we're trying to get the message across that it's so important to have the conversation with your next of kin to say you would like to become an organ donor if anything happened. Do donate more organs. And, you know, as I said, a lot of people don't know that, but it is the next of kin's decision at the end of the day.
And that's actually that's a point very well made, and I'm aware of it myself, that, you know, even... I know I'm with MS now, but if I have an alert on my wristband, but, you know, if anything happens to me, it's my next of kin are going to be, they're not going to be looking to see what I have in my pockets. It's the next of kin.
Yeah.
So the message is, Isabel, to every listener out there right now, you know, I know it might seem freaky. You mightn't want to be having this conversation, but guys, it's not as hard as you think. Tell somebody, this is what I want to do. And it doesn't matter your age, because they'll harvest something. And the most important thing is there will be somebody there who needs that gift of life that you will be helping them. And Isabel, as I said already, you're living proof of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my life has changed because of this selfless act by someone I don't know. And, you know, organ donation will affect you. You're more likely to need an organ than donate an organ, you know. Which is also very important. But absolutely, just have the conversation with your next of kin.
Now, I know there's fantastic medical people out there. I met some of them last year. I will mention one. I'll give a name check to one. Is Professor Liam Plant at the CUH in the renal department, doing tremendous work. I know he's still working with you, Isabel. He's working with Sally. He's working with so many people. And, you know, when Sally... let it be known to me that she's back on the transplant list, I said, we'll get the message out there. And that's why I wanted you to come on. I wanted you to come on anyway, like, but, you know, particularly this week.
Yeah.
So what would be your message right now, Isabel, to people who are listening that are still uncertain? What would you say to them?
If you could just think about it, you're saving somebody's life. Why take them with you? You know, my life has changed completely. I am a new person. You know, after my transplant, I was very sick. And you know, now I am just flying. I wake up in the morning and I have so much energy. I'd have no oxygen. You know, I'm able to meet my friends and go out and... You know, it's given me, you know, life, and it's just a miracle. It's just a miracle what you could be doing for someone.
Now, Isabel, I'm just going to change tact a little bit. You did mention earlier that you had a fiancé and that he travelled with you over for the transplant. Is there something in the planning?
No, not yet. Maybe a couple of years. not at the moment. I want to get a little bit more healthier before I start going all bridezilla.
I do you know what? No, I can't see you through the phone, but I can imagine now you're going scarlet. I put you on the spot, and I shouldn't have, and I apologise.
I'm only thinking that at all.
But listen, I got to say to you, I have met you in person. And for any person that would meet Isabel, you'd never think, looking at her, that she was through the wars. 15 years on a waiting list, not knowing what the future held, but because that some very decent, generous person out there said to a loved one, I want to give my organs. Because, guys, I'm not going to be morbid, but where you're going after this life, you won't be needing them. So you might as well leave them to somebody. And I know that sounds like flippant, but hey, that's how easy it can be. And to look at somebody like Isabel or Sally or anyone, we all know people that have been through transplants. And, you know, it's just a miracle, as you said. So, Isabel, I want to mention your parents as well, because you've been surrounded by a wonderful family, and it's not been easy on them either, but I know that they're celebrating looking at you.
Yeah, my mum is has been with me every step of the way. My dad unfortunately passed away 10 years ago, but he was by my side every step of the way, and I know he's looking down on me, and I know he had a hand in getting me my transplant as well.
He probably had a hand in the transplant as well.
Probably did.
Yeah, put that there and put that there, yeah.
I know he was having a pint of Beamish when I got my transplant anyway, raising a glass to me.
Ah, sure, a good Corkman. Isabel, how are you doing today? I know that you were... you had a problem with the ankle, but listen, how are you getting on?
My ankles, I have a bit of a problem with my ankle because of the steroids I'm taking. I have something called a bone infarct, so we're trying to sort that out. I'm in a lot of pain over that. My heart and lungs are really, really good. You know, I've had no rejection whatsoever, which is amazing. Now, at the moment, I do have a bit of a chest infection. Unfortunately, when I spoke to you the other day, I was feeling much better. But I was actually, as you said, I was just with Liam Plant there a while ago, so I've just started an antibiotic. But I'm fine, you know. An antibiotic will clear it up in a few days. I'll be flying again.
Well, I tell you, you're an absolute legend. And Isabel, when you get back on your feet and you're feeling a bit stronger, you might come down here to the studio to me and we'll have another chat.
I'd love to.
Yeah, listen, I think you're amazing. I really, really do, and I mean that genuinely. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us for Organ Donation Awareness Week. And again, once again, I can't stress this enough. You can text Organ Donor to 50050, but listen, lads, forget that. Talk to your family. Talk to your friends. You know, and have a real conversation about this, because somewhere out there, there is another Isabel Terry. There's another Sally Nagel. And they're waiting for that phone call that'll grant them their life. So, Isabel, I wish you the very, very best and continued good health to you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Dara. Talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon. We'll catch up for a cup of tea at some stage, you know, don't.
Perfect. Bye.
Take care, Isabel. All the best. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's one of, you know, a ray of sunshine, I have to say, and... there are times in your life when you might feel down, or you might feel things aren't going the way that they should be going. And then you talk to somebody like Isabel Terry. And I could talk to her forever. And I will have her in later on in the year again when she's when the ankle is cleared up and whatever. But, you know, I'll just reiterate, have the conversation. You know, the gift that you might give to somebody will be life-saving. And I know I was a bit flippant there earlier, I didn't mean to be, but, you know, when your life ends, where you're going, you won't be needing those organs, but other people will. And unfortunately, I realise sometimes it can be a very tragic death, can be the outcome. But, you know, even in the midst of that, I think there's great solace to be taken that, you know, even though you've lost your own loved one, somebody else is able to live in their honour.